Look at Earth from outer space. Everyone must find a place. Give me time and give me space. Give me real, don't give me fake. Give me strength, reserve control. Give me heart and give me soul. Give me time, give us a kiss. And tell me your own politic. And open up your eyes. Open up your eyes. And open up your eyes. That was better.
And that was Coldplay, right?
Yeah, Coldplay Politic.
I think I have all their albums.
Amazing guys.
I totally have. I mean, I was hooked on them from the moment they did Yellow.
Yeah.
And I was paying attention to their video, and I was just like, yeah, I like what these guys are all about, right?
Their lyrics are on another level to me.
Yeah. Is Chris writing all of them, or is it?
Yeah, he writes everything.
Okay, I didn't know that it was just him.
He even puts together some, like, the music, too, and stuff, you know, with his band.
I know it's a little nerve-wracking to start the show that way, and it's kind of a
it
weird
really
thing
is.
On a construction podcast, but I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Danny, for doing that to open up the show. And welcome to the Construction Life environment here.
Thank you for having me.
Who's on the job site? Are you taking a day off?
I work alone most of the time.
Yeah.
I just get helpers every once in a while. Today is actually my birthday, so I have the day off kind of
thing. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I didn't realize that.
I don't want to take your day away. I don't like going around promoting it.
Okay, well, now you just did, so now everyone knows. But they don't know exactly what day we're recording, and this is still a few days away from being posted. But
yeah, it's okay.
All right, in and around April.
In and around April. April 22nd. There we go.
Well, Daniel, thanks for coming on the show. We've got Sons of Carpentry here. You can find them online, www.sonsofcarpentry.ca. His email is sonsofcarpentry@gmail.com. And of course, on IG, you can find him under the handle Sons of Carpentry. And also on Facebook.
And Facebook, yeah.
And Facebook as well. Let me do a quick shout out. I'm wearing Custom Development Group's t-shirt, long t-shirt. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I also want to do another shout out. I don't know if you saw that I had a few posts last week, and I was having an interesting conversation with Grant from G.B. Plumbing about the heat recovery stack, which I think anybody who listens to the show knows that I'm not a fan of it. And he did a test where he was measuring the water at 108 degrees coming out of the bathtub spout. And then he was measuring the heat recovery stack and where it was going in and temperatures there. And then I just saw that whole test. And in my opinion, it was false. It was a false test because it wasn't true to what exactly is happening in that application. So I'm going to be doing my own video. And I just quickly did. I pulled out my thermal cam and I had it set at a rain head at 80 inches height, 104 degrees. So it's 104 degrees because that's the max that you would probably do it. Some women might shower 106, 108 or whatever, but they're not going to stay underneath that water for that long. But typically it's 104. And at 80 inches, by the time it reached the drain, it was 10 degrees less. So we're going down to 94 degrees. So it's already entering, but that's not even hitting a body yet. So I already know that once it hits the body, it cascades down the sides of the walls, and then it goes down the drain. You're going to lose some more of that temperature heat, and then you have to travel the 20 to 30 feet that it has to get to the heat recovery stack, so you're going to lose some more temperature there. And so based on my calculations, we'll see what happens, but I'm going to do this test to reveal exactly how I don't agree with this heat recovery stack, unless it's right underneath the shower and the tank is right beside that stack. So that was just something, and I'm not picking at Grant, and I'm not picking at the test that he did. I'm just saying I wanted a fair test. That's all I wanted, because a lot of people were very complimentary saying that, okay, I didn't realize that this heat recovery stack actually works. And I'm like, it actually doesn't. You know what I mean? So it says it's more motivated by political and money being made by a person who's developing it and producing it and retailing it, selling it, where we're forced to use it, right? But even another person made a comment about how on the actual stack, it says that you'll only get maximum, in an ideal situation, 42% return on it. So it's like it keeps on having these variables. So I just wanted to bring that up. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermory, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermory, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermory to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermory difference is to hold the real thing in your hands, so visit their website today at www.thermoryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermoryUSA. Choose Dahl for your plumbing needs and discover the peace of mind that comes with their unwavering reliability and exceptional service. Experience the Dahl difference and join the growing community of contractors who trust in their expertise and rely on their products. Check out Dahl at www.dahlvalve.com and on social at Dahl Valve. Hey architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by ElastiChem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the U.S. But that's it. So now we want to talk about Sons of Carpentry, right?
Yes.
How long have you been around?
I've been on my own Sons of Carpentry for a good 10 years now, about.
How'd you get started?
So for me, getting started was I was at York University studying economics. And I needed a job, pay for school. So I went to the bakery at Rogers and Marley over there. Okay. I don't know if it was a Calvin's or something.
Okay.
You meet up with the guys there in the morning. I got there 6:30, get in the van. The van is loaded with tools. Boss tells you, find a spot on the floor. You got to move the baskets over, sit in the middle. It was like super dangerous.
Of course.
But, you know, that's back in, that was 1998, around there.
Well, it's nice that he's carpooling everybody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So super dangerous. But we get to the site. I didn't know what to expect. First thing he starts getting me going is cutting baseboards.
So this is the first time you're on a site?
Yes. So cutting baseboards, he shows me how it works. I understand concepts pretty quickly. It wasn't too hard. So that lasted a good 2 years. He would not let me do anything else besides cutting baseboards.
Is it because he saw that you could do it and you're pretty good at it? I'll leave him be?
I think it's more of keeping the workers down, almost, like just doing one thing. So he had other guys installing doors, the more like guys that have been there longer and stuff like that with more seniority. They would do doors, windows, and all the new rookie guys was just baseboards.
Were you letting them know that you wanted to know more, that you wanted to try?
I really didn't like ask too much. I would just see what other guys were doing and I'd be able to pick up what they were doing. But it got to a point where I wanted to do other things. And he really wouldn't let me because the other guys were doing stuff. So I would have to finish my baseboards before these other guys are finished their work, just so I can jump onto something and learn something new. So I figured out how to do it really fast and efficient and as clean as you can. I mean, on these builder sites, it's really difficult to make it look clean.
It's just,
that's all it is.
Speed.
So I kept working. Took about 2 years until I was able to crush the baseboards in the house and start doing other things in the house. So
2 years of baseboards.
Just baseboards.
My knees, talking about like colonial?
Yeah, the small stuff. Three and a half, four and a half, an upgrade.
Finger joint?
Yeah, finger joint, pine.
It's like the worst trim ever.
That's what the builders give you, right?
Yeah, I know. I get it. I understand.
That's what's included. So after doing that, finally, I started doing doors, doing other things. But like the work there, because of the speed and everybody, all the other trades before you, their speed, everything like the waviest walls we'd have to work on, studs that are totally off when you're putting your pre-hung doors on, with the jams. So when the 2x4s are totally curved, so it open up at the top and open up at the bottom, all kinds of
How
stuff
How do you
like
fix
this.
That with like a 2¼-inch casing?
You can't.
You just fix it. You dap it. Dap it to death.
Pretty much.
That's there's no other way to do it. You got hockey sticks for framing, right?
Yeah. So it was so that. And then after the painters would come in, dust all over the floor from our dust. They wouldn't even clean. They'd start spraying all over the trim. It's honestly like just all
about
speed.
They realize
speed.
That if you spray and you're spraying paint and it gets airborne and it pushes the dust.
They don't care.
Adheres to the, no?
The laborers didn't come in and clean the house properly. They were there scheduled. They would start working. That's the way it was.
Was it just track building? So it's like as soon as you finish one, get to the next, to the next, to the
yes.
next.
Yes. So working on those sites was honestly like being in prison. The same thing every day, over and over. Same closets, same doors. It was just it's the worst kind of work.
On the street before entering the first house and start looking at the row of houses and going, I gotta do that one, then I gotta do that one, I gotta do that one.
Exactly. That one across the street, this one down here. Yeah. It was pretty much just take your tools into the next one. As soon as you were done, next one.
Was it beating you down?
Honest, that's the thing. So by the time you started getting really good and you kind of wanted to make the work cleaner, you started realizing it was almost impossible to have really nice work in these places, right? Just because the way the builders have it set up, they just want everything put out fast. So this was like, early 2000s? It was going gangbusters, the sites.
Yeah.
There were so many houses being put up. We were trimming a good 30 to 60 houses a month. So that's what was being put out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was like you, how many on the crew?
About 4 guys in a house. There was one old man, he would be on the saw all day cutting all the windows. Another guy installing doors. Then you'd have me doing baseboards. And the thing too was when I first started the baseboards, my boss made me do it such an old school way where I'd have to cut the whole room. And then he'd make me tack in a nail by hand at the bottom of the baseboard just to hold it up.
Okay.
Then another guy would come in behind me with the actual like pass load or pneumatic nailer and nail everything in. That's how we used to do it.
So it was an assembly line.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
But you were constantly waking up and doing the exact same thing over and over.
Every day. The first 2 months of work, my knees were throbbing. I couldn't even sit in the back of a car.
How was school going on while you
were doing? So this was during summer.
Okay. All right.
And then once I started making money that first summer, the money was good.
Yeah.
It's getting better. And I just stopped the school and kept going construction.
Can I ask, what were you making? Like, what was he paying you for this?
So when I started, I would say it was like $15 an hour, maybe.
It was pretty good. 21, too. It's not too bad.
Because, you know, it's hard work. We're working hard. He paid us well. Mr. Tony Silva. And
you put money in your pocket.
Yeah. And it was good. And we were working a lot of hours, whatever you wanted. I mean, the only thing was overtime didn't exist. I mean, you do the overtime hours. You wouldn't get paid overtime, right? Saturdays.
What would you extend? Like an 8-hour day turn into what? Or you, because
like
10-hour
days,
right?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes 12. And then starts over the next day again and to the weekend.
Were you the only one, Daniel, that was questioning on the crew? Or did the crew mostly just get it done? Let's move on to the next one. Get it done.
Like, there was a lot of guys that didn't even care.
But they were, like, one of the few that was just questioning, we can probably do a little better here.
Absolutely. All the time. So even after that first set, like, it was, like, maybe 5 years I worked for him. I got poached by another company, which always happens.
Yeah.
That's the only way to find workers. And I went to go work for the other company, and it was kind of the same thing. They were doing more houses, but it was the same thing because what was done before us, like the drywallers, the framers, they didn't care.
They didn't care either.
Exactly.
So it was all done on speed, right?
That's it. So I finally, I'm like, I had enough of this. I got to get out of here. And that's when I kind of went on my own.
So how many years? So it was 2 years on base, but then it was
another 3 years for him at least.
5 years of hard knocks, eh?
Yeah. Oh, it was, honestly, it was brutal. Like, in like the safety too, no masks, no nothing, no glasses. I mean, you were like on your own taking care of yourself.
What was the old man on the miter saw doing? Just squinting his eyes?
Yeah.
Pretty much, huh?
Yeah, he's...
No hearing protection.
He's a veteran. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No hearing protection at all. That, and honestly, like now I wear hearing protection, and every time I take it off and I hear a saw, it's so deafening loud. I couldn't even imagine how I was able to do it before without all that stuff. Yeah, it was crazy.
Did they still work? They're still working or no? No, you don't know.
So this guy, probably not.
Okay.
Other guys are that I joined after when I got poached. They're still working, doing sites.
So yeah. What did you move to when you got poached? You got onto another crew?
Same thing. Same trim. It was organized differently where everybody would kind of help each other a little bit more.
Okay.
So like you'd have four guys, same thing in each house. They had a lot of guys, so they were splitting it amongst houses. So we'd all do the doors together. Once all the doors were hung, start the windows, the baseboards. One guy did his own kind of floor. Another guy did another floor kind of thing.
So yeah. You apply to economics. You get a job because you need money.
Yeah.
If it would have been a different trade, it would have been the same situation. You would have.
I just happened to get into the carpentry because my mom was talking to somebody at church. They need a worker.
Okay, so that's where the connection came. Okay.
Exactly. I didn't really.
Did you ever have an interest in carpentry?
So I used to do a lot of things like models, like little car models. One science project, we built a house with solar panels on it. And that was like grade 8. But the thing was, the solar panels we bought weren't strong enough. So we had a row of Duracell batteries underneath. So when we flashed the light on the solar panel at the top.
Okay.
One of us would touch the batteries at the bottom so the house would light up. But, you know, the concept was there kind of thing.
It's kind of like charging EVs, you know, on a public space where they're using a generator to charge it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's funny.
But it worked, right? Yeah. So, but it was kind of cool that you guys are that age or messing around with the idea of solar panel, mini solar panels.
Tiny ones. Yeah. Like maybe to power a calculator, a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was... Those were the things I was into. So my dad was always in construction.
What trade was he?
Sewers and water mains more. Okay. City work. I remember being young too. He brought us into a manhole. And it was like huge. And what we'd see is like water coming from people's houses when they flush the toilet.
Yep.
So you'd see, you know, like a turd
course
come right by you. And then another... couple minutes later, another one, and you're like, wow, this is incredible. Like, people don't think about like how this actually happens.
When you flush, you have no idea where it goes,
right? But
nor do you care.
It was everything was leveled perfectly, so it would just carry at a nice speed, you know, not too fast.
How old were you when you were in the sewer?
I would say like maybe 12, 13, just like because my dad would go like on the weekends or something, somebody had to check something, he'd bring me with him, and I was crazy. I was curious about everything. So I jumped in the whole
thing. I mean, it's a good job. It's good money. It was steady work. It's a dirty job.
Yeah, it was. My dad's pants used to come home full of mud every all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
My poor mom.
Yeah.
She used to have to deal with that.
That's but you were fascinated by this? Like you were fascinated by the mechanical of it.
Like you couldn't believe what was going on under the underground. Like, you know, I never imagined that it was like that. I just, you flush the toilet, you don't think about where it goes, no, right?
You don't, right?
Yeah.
What other things did he show you that?
I mean, he used to just do all kinds of things at home too himself. A little trim, hang a door himself, do some tiles. You know, these Portuguese guys, that's what they do. They do everything.
They specialize in one, and then they ask questions of everybody else, and they can tinker around to do
cement work. My dad was super into blocks, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I know your dad was cement guy too.
Right? He was masonry, right? Yeah. Mason, yeah.
And they would make all kinds of things at home out of cement.
That's the problem is that you get a mason, they'll just build everything out of it. Like if they can frame a window, they'll frame a window. Instead of wood, they'll use bricks. I remember him building when I was much younger. He was building a fence out of brick. And I was like, really?
Like in Canada? Brick,
right? Yeah, in Canada.
It's not going to last.
I know it's not. And it didn't last. I was like, even as a little kid and I didn't know anything about anything, I was just like, I don't know if that's going to last. Like, I just don't. But I get it. He wanted to just do it out of brick.
Yeah.
Right? Because he had his brick friends. He had everybody. And all of a sudden, you were just like going, okay, let's build it out of brick. And then then he got fancy with the arches. You know what I mean? And then you start going, okay, I was fascinated by the plywood and how he was able to make brick go into a curve. And that's when I started paying attention to, okay, there's some value there. It may not be the best for a fence, but there's value in understanding the principles behind it. Mm-hmm. No different than you being in the sewer there in the main and you realizing the way this network works, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
So you got on another crew. How many years did you do that for?
Probably like 2-3 years again, same thing, just working. And this crew did a lot of hours, like
long hours,
they would finish houses. Like I remember doing a huge custom house with them. We had like a good 15 workers in the house.
Well, that's a big crew.
We finished the whole house in one day, custom doors. It was all organized.
Hung all the trim, the doors,
everything.
And in one day?
One day we finished. It was like morning until like 10 o'clock easily at night.
Why were they so, they had to get it done that day?
They just wanted to finish. Yeah, exactly. You know, you finish, you get paid, right?
Were you tired?
Oh my God. We were tired every day. It was the same. Wake up, do the same thing over and over again. Go to bed, wake up over.
Is it like spurts of energy? Because I remember like when I was much younger, I got on a painting crew and they got me on filling holes. And I would go into a house, monster house, right? Whatever, 6,000 square feet. And you're just like doing one hole. And you're like, how many holes are in this house, man? But I mean, like when you guys were in there 15 and did you have little spurts of energy where it's like you get started at first, it's slow?
Honestly, it was like full speed the whole day.
Full speed.
Everybody. They were... This guy had a crew of great workers, talented guys doing like good work.
Where do you find everybody?
He just like, I think he poached most of them, right? You go get the good workers from all the crews and you put them together in your crew and you're ready to go.
So when did you start Sons?
So Sons of Carpentry has been since like the beginning of Instagram roughly?
So like 10 years or so?
Not quite, but something like that. I guess it's hard to pinpoint exactly. I did work for the city for a couple of years before I started Sons of Carpentry. And
what were you doing at the city?
Parks and Rec.
Okay.
So just like weird cutting grass, lining soccer fields, baseball diamonds, stuff like that. Yeah. But the thing was, it was just a 6-month contract. So seasonal. Then you'd have 6 months off, temp work. And that's when I started getting back into the trim and stuff or doing construction again.
So when you started Sons of Carpentry, what was it that you told yourself that you were not going to do, but you were going to do for Sons of Carpentry?
So,
because you obviously learned the lessons, right? You learned a lot of how to run a ship.
Yeah. So the thing was, my thing is always try your best, no matter what. It takes you a little bit more time, whatever. But you're always trying your best, always trying to do good work.
Yeah.
Trying to get into more custom things. So even then, that's on my website, all my pictures. I did this whole house. That was the first house I did that I started with Sons of Carpentry. And it took me a year to trim this whole house. I did wall units on site, everything. So it looks good.
It looks really good, right?
That's all my work.
Yeah.
Everything on the website.
And I want people to understand that it's Sons of Carpentry, but you're doing more than just carpentry, right?
So now we got to branch out a little because you got to stay busy.
Of course.
And if I were to just do custom carpentry, I don't think there's enough out there to stay busy all the time. So I started doing other things. It started at my parents' house. I did the first washroom for them. It started actually with just changing a window. They just wanted new windows, so I changed the window.
Bigger or keep the same size?
Same size.
Okay.
You know, with brick mold on the outside, whatever.
See, I did the same thing, but I made it bigger because the subdivision homes, they give you really small windows, right?
Yeah.
I never understood that. So I was just like, well, with him being a mason,
let's do this, right? That's the thing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to cut the bricks outside and have to start resetting them and all that stuff. So I changed one window. It started there. Then we did the whole washroom. Then we did the whole house. I did a lot of work at my parents' house. That's where
you learned some life lessons.
I would do the work there first, perfect it almost.
Yeah.
And then I would have confidence to take that out and go and do that in other people's houses.
How was it? Actually, I myself never even really asked myself this question. How was it having your parents as a client? Because technically,
my parents are the greatest clients.
Okay, but why were they the greatest clients?
Because they overpay, number one. I didn't ask for money, but they always do. You know, they're trying to help you out.
Of course, of course.
You get lunch made, dinner's made, clothes are clean. That's my mom is hardcore like that, right?
Yeah.
Taking care of us. So to work for my parents is the best. I prefer them over anybody, to be honest.
But they also, did they like what you did in the end? They loved it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're kind of brought up so negative. So you don't get many comments or, you know, you don't get many good job, Dan. But you know they appreciate it and stuff like that. Yeah. That's the way they are. They're negative.
And then from there, it went to another room or like the other projects?
Yeah. So then I did all the panel molding in the house. I changed all the casings, changed the doors, added new baseboards. We went from whatever, 4.5 or less to 7.5. And I just really liked it.
So where was the knowledge coming from? Like when you wanted to try to figure out something that you hadn't done before?
I just feel like I pick things up really quickly.
Was it more on site? Because I mean, like with me, it was just me scratching my head kind of thing and trying to figure out, well, how would I tackle this? Like, how would I pull this off? And then I would just come up with a way to do it. It would take longer, but I was there to trial and error it anyway.
Yeah. And that's the thing too about taking longer. Like when I first started setting tiles, it used to take me forever. And I had a client who used to say, Dan, stop, get away from doing that. I'm like, but how are you supposed to get better and faster without practicing? That's the only way that I feel in construction is the only way to get better is to practice. The more hours you get, the better you are. There's no such thing as natural talent for construction, right? The only thing that's natural is I got friends that are super tall. Maybe they can reach the top of doors to do stuff or do caulking or painting.
Yeah, that would be natural talent there.
That's the only thing.
But skills are taught. Skills are learned. Skills take time.
That's the only way.
Yeah.
Or else that's it.
So how is it dealing with clients these days?
So I have awesome clients. Number one, I always respect the client, even if they're pain in the ass, they're cheap, whatever. I always give them all the options, and then it's up to them to whatever they want.
You just present everything up front.
Always.
Yeah.
And then most of the time they choose the cheaper option because they're trying to save money. I don't know why they try to save money when it's their own house, but whatever. And other people are awesome clients. Like I'd finished the job. He was so happy with my job that he gave me an extra $2,000 on top of, you know,
just
what I
out
asked
of the
for.
Blue.
Exactly.
Because he felt that you worked harder than what you priced.
Like, $1,000 is for your kids' schooling. $1,000 is for you because I like the job you did and this and that.
That's nice.
So you have clients like that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you got clients on the opposite end of the spectrum where they expect you to do things for free almost. They don't they just expect you to make an hourly wage while you're working there kind of thing.
Like a certain set figure.
Yeah.
They feel that you deserve.
Yeah. Like $20. You only did this. That should only cost me this much. Like stuff like that.
Do you take the time and educate them that there's a lot of stuff behind this? Like, I didn't show up. This is not my first day. There's skills. There's business. There's a bunch of stuff that's behind.
You try
this.
But I don't.
They don't listen to it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a funny world to navigate, and that's the business side of things that you got to navigate, right?
Yeah.
And how's that for you to navigate the business part of it?
I still have lessons to learn.
Of course.
It's tough. The hardest part is getting at home and doing estimates and stuff after you've been working all day. So, I mean, that part I'm lacking a little bit, but hopefully I make up for it in the quality of work that I do. So
I just did a rant a couple of days ago where I was talking about a message that was sent to me by somebody that has been on the show and listens. And he was just telling me about clients insisting on phone estimates. Just give me the number over the phone. And I never understood that. It made no sense to me. And like a scope of work, it makes no sense to me, right? If you're a service trade, so you need to unclog a toilet or something like that, sure, there's a figure. Here's the number. I can give it over the phone. Do you want me to come? We'll take care of it, right? But when it comes to custom trim work, tiling, all this other stuff, you need to see what potentially the hurdles are, what's going to happen, logistics, how to get debris out of here. Like, there's a lot of variables that it should be done in person, right?
Yeah, like there's one client I have where I was doing a tile job for her washroom, and I expected, so we did a contract the first time. I expected like 12 by 12 tiles or 12 by 24 or whatever. She shows up with these crazy, huge custom tiles and expects me to do it for the same price, which is
how big were they? 3x3 or 4x4?
Yeah, 36 by 36, stuff like that. I mean, it's way more difficult, right?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, the mosaics is the same thing. If you want to
integrate, right, if you go smaller,
yeah,
it's also more expensive. That's what I tell clients all the time now. But there's even some clients I make mistakes of not having a contract because you think you trust them. And then when you show up, it's a $2,000 toilet to install. You show up, the vanity came from Spain. No instructions, all in pieces, no screws, no holes, no nothing. You have to put the whole thing together. And it's like, this is totally different than, you know, just this isn't a regular vanity.
You ever go to like tile suppliers? And I think they always have them displayed, right? And they always have the price on the bottom right corner or whatever it is, right? And they'll have some sort of specifications or key kind of points of interest regarding this tile. I guess it's like the material, whether it's porcelain, natural, or what have you, ceramic. But there's also ratings, like it could be used in a wet, it could be used in a dry, it could be used for a front, it could be whatever, durability. It could be used for exterior purposes, right? Mm-hmm. I honestly think that these tile suppliers and the sales reps, for the most part, never install, right?
No.
So they always speak to the clients that are interested in buying this as if they've installed, right? But they never install. So they're getting their information from the installers and they're not absorbing all the information because they just don't want to. But I think on that little piece of paper that's identifying that tile, there should be a code where it's like maybe 1 to 5 scale saying level of difficulty to install.
Mm-hmm.
1 or 5. So then when the client buys it, they could be asking, okay, well, what's this all about? Well, your installer is going to charge more because this is a difficult tile to install. Your installer is probably going to charge medium because this is an average tile to install. I wish they would do that.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Because the problem is that they're convinced on buying this product by the sales pitch. And then they just love the look of it. They photograph it. They Photoshop it and put it together into the existing surroundings wherever it's going to get installed. But they never for the second think about, okay, this is harder to install. This is easier to install. This is average to install. They never think that.
Yeah.
But we think that all the time.
Yeah, because we're the ones installing it.
We know the level of difficulty, how easy, hard, or average.
So also this client loves Pinterest. Yeah. And is always, this is the look I'm going for. And I'm like, but do you know how much work it is required to get that look? And people don't understand.
I think one day I should do this, eh? Like, let's say you just do a bathroom or a laundry or something like that. And they give you a picture from Pinterest, right? And they screenshot it. And then I think one day, just as a joke, I'll actually copy the header of her desktop or the phone and I'll stick it on the wall there. So I'd be like, here, this is what you're looking for. WWW, Pinterest and whatever. And so you wanted Pinterest. This is exactly what it is.
Yeah, look at the picture. I always tell people too, like, you can get ideas from other jobs. You're obviously going to do that, but it's your house. Make it your own. Do your own custom thing.
Plus, describe the direction that you want to go with this. So if you're showing me a photograph and there's one small detail that's associated with this photograph, only speak to me about that one small detail. Don't speak to me about the entire photograph, unless you want your room to look exactly like this, and that's a different story. Mm-hmm. That way you can price it out. But for the most part, whenever I've had Pinterest conversations, it's about one little thing that they liked in that photograph that they want to have in their home. Mm-hmm. So then just be specific about that.
Yeah, it would help.
It's just a clearer direction, as simple as that.
Yeah.
But clients, have they gotten better or worse after the pandemic years? Because I know that the construction industry had its heyday, during those 2-3 years. Like, they were charging whatever they possibly could to get. The material was expensive and stuff, but now we're leveling out. Like, 2023 and 2024 is different. And then we still don't know what's going to be next year, right?
What was crazy was the price of 2x4s during COVID.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Up to 12, 13 bucks.
Yeah, and a closet would cost you $200 in 2x4s to frame, when it used to be like 30 bucks. So, I mean, COVID was crazy. And it made so many delays for stuff. Like, I use a lot of, I do IKEA kitchens, yep, and stuff like that. And they had a lot of shortages of parts. We waited almost a year for some cabinets and stuff like that. Yeah. And I couldn't complete the person's job because we're waiting for this cabinet. There's still a few out there like that.
How do you navigate that conversation with the client? Like, you pull the trigger, they agree to it, they hire you, deposit milestones, but then all of a sudden, due to what's going on, we're not going to get this until like 6 months, 12 months down the line. Like, they're just sitting here.
You got to put that project on hold and move on to the next one.
Nothing bugs a client more.
There's nothing you can do, though. Yeah, you can't just wait around for them to deliver these missing parts and stuff like that, right? Like, that custom vanity that came from Spain, that was during the pandemic. Took like 4 months or more. You got to go do another job. You can't stay there.
No, you got to shut it down and then move on, right? And plus, you got to stay busy yourself.
So even another washroom I'm doing right now, usually I let the clients take care of buying the tiles that they want.
Yeah.
And the finishes, I only pay for construction materials is included in my price normally. And so she went, I keep saying she, let's just say the client.
Client, yeah.
Went and bought tiles. Porcelanosa, you're probably familiar with them.
Yep.
And gave them the measurement, but they didn't know that the way that she wanted them installed was going to require more tile. So she bought the amount of
tile. She's going on a bias? She's going diagonally or something?
So we had to do a shower. She wanted some kind of curbless thing, but okay, we couldn't do curbless. We still had to raise it, so I had to cut 45s to do it like an angle. And she didn't want thresholds either.
Okay.
And I needed to also, when you put down the huge 32 by 32 tiles to the drain in the middle, cut the angles and all that stuff so everything slopes properly. Yep. So they only got the perfect amount of tiles. If I didn't make a mistake or anything, it still wouldn't have been enough. You know what I mean? It was still short. So you still need to get a few extra pieces just in case a mistake is made or something. So now the same thing. These tiles are custom from somewhere in Europe. It's going to take another 2-3 months to get again. and we're stuck in the same boat.
How short were you, like one tile or two tile?
Two tiles.
Two tiles.
Two 36 by 36s.
What was the square footage price on it? Do you remember?
I don't even know. But that's, I mean, the thing. I don't even know what they're paying or buying.
I know, but I mean, I've seen even extreme tile. Like, you can get to $100 or $200 a square foot, depending on what kind of tile, where they are from the world, how handmade they are.
I don't think they were that expensive.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Is like, the, why don't the clients have this issue about having one extra tile left over? We could have saved the money on that. But what if one breaks during travel? What if one breaks during install? What if there's a lot of what ifs? What if we are short? What if you want to change your pattern on the fly, which is going to affect that?
Yeah, so all it's the like, cutoffs and everything.
Yeah, having two different or three extra tiles is not a big deal to have it. Have it, yeah. And then you don't have this problem anymore. Lots of people run into that problem.
Absolutely.
So when you build things now, you're not using the 3.5-inch finger joint, right? Unless the client's asking for it?
That's the only way. So, I mean, I still get clients who don't want to buy poplar. They buy MDF.
Of course.
And that's what I got to install. I still do, no matter what the material is, it's going to look flawless anyways to me. And my standards are very high.
Why do you, are you still working alone?
Yeah. So I get a helper if there's something I can't do by myself.
What's the reason why you want to stay working alone? Because I was alone in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I went batty not talking to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I always wanted to talk. Most of the time I do a project, clients are gone. I see them in the morning when they're getting ready to leave. Mm-hmm. And then you work all day, and then they come home from their work day, and then you're wrapping up your day, and then you leave and you repeat against the next day, right? Mm-hmm. And I would just go batty not having somebody there to talk to, right?
I put on my headphones, I listen to Howard Stern all morning.
And just clue out, and that's it, yeah?
To me, it's the best. I laugh out loud, I sing, whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't mind working by myself. The problem with hiring people, it's you can't really trust them. When you're not there, they're not working. I've seen that so many times.
No, you're not wrong, I know.
And like quality, and do they really care about what they're doing? They just want to get paid, go home, which is reasonable. You're working, you want to get paid, but...
How many times have you, like, Dan, left the job site, left someone there, take care of a task, you come back.
And they're on the veranda on their phone.
Or like, you think to yourself, how come nothing's been done in your eyes? Yeah. Nothing's been done.
Yeah, exactly. I hired a kid just to come and vacuum plywoods before I installed hardwood. I wanted the hardwood or the plywood to be really nice and clean because we were doing a 7.5 glue assist.
Yeah.
All day, he vacuumed 12 plywoods.
12 sheets of plywood?
Yeah. I would do that like in an hour.
What was he doing it? Just with the nozzle?
That's how I wanted him to do it.
Okay.
Because I wanted it perfectly clean. I didn't want any dust on it, nothing. And it took him all day. I couldn't believe it. I showed him how to do it in like 5 minutes of plywood, no problem. But it just took him all day.
You think that he would probably take the initiative and figure out, okay, well, let me sweep up the bulk of it and then just vacuum.
So it was
everything.
Already swept.
Okay, so then he already just.
It was just getting.
Like, so he took all day to do dust. That?
Yeah, 12. And then it's like, you can't do this.
What's his next job? He's going to be like milking cows? I don't understand what's going on there.
He honestly keeps calling me for work. So, yeah.
Those guys are the best, eh? They don't do a good job. They don't leave a good impression, but they keep on hounding the employer for work hours.
Begging me, please, can I come work? And it's like, but, this isn't charity. We got to make money.
He's probably looking at it like, oh, it was easy money. It wasn't hard work.
Probably.
I want to do another day like that. Yeah, but not absolutely. Every day is like that.
No. But
for the most part, most of them don't really care about your business, eh?
Not at all. That's like I've seen guys driving around like work trucks. They don't take care of them.
No.
You see them ripping it down the road, this and that.
Just throwing stuff in the back, not even organizing
it. They don't care.
So someone else can go in there and find something that they need at some point during the day.
I mean, there are companies I've heard on your show that they're organized and the workers care. Yeah, it's hard to find those guys. They either work for somebody already or they work for themselves.
But do you think sometimes when you're on your own or you've had a bad labor or someone come out and work with you, do you start thinking of, like, there's no way for me to grow my business. I can't. I'm a one man shop. I can only do so many jobs per week, per month, per year. Mm. I can only attract so many clients. Like, are you fine with that? Or are you considering, I want to grow this more so then I can just manage this business, but I can't find the crew to do this.
Mm-hmm. So I do want to grow. I'll sub out some things, like, you know, electrician, painter, plumber, but guys to come and actually work for me is just, it's impossible to find good guys.
Where are you looking?
Well, where that's also looking? A problem. That's the thing. Like, I think I'm probably being too cheap as well. I need to really pay somebody proper money to get somebody good, kind of thing, you know?
What's the going rate these days? What's a 20, I don't know.
It depends what they're doing.
Okay.
So for me, hourly, roughly, I'll charge a client $60 to $100 an hour. You know, that's tools, truck, all this stuff.
Yeah, that's you to show up, when you by yourself, yeah, and your
tools. When you pay
a
guy, like, I don't know, I think like 25 to 30 an hour is fair.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But even then, it's difficult to make money because...
if they're not producing, then you're paying more and then it's taking longer. So then the longer it takes, the less money you make profit-wise.
Yeah, I guess it's like a balancing act. You got to find the right spot, find the right guys. Maybe I got to go poach some guys.
Are you calculating, like, are you reviewing each of your jobs that you're finishing and calculating exactly what your profit margin was?
Yeah, that's how you learn some lessons. Like, some jobs, it seems like the smaller the job, the more money you can make on it. You're in and
sometimes,
out quick.
Yeah, sometimes.
In a day, you can clean easily $1,000 on some jobs. Then there's, like, washroom jobs that I'm doing sometimes. It averages out to, like, $200 a day. And you're like...
if that.
What happened?
I know.
Yeah. And then at the end of the job, you're like kind of, you know, angry with yourself a little bit. This isn't working out. I got to change this up for next time. I got to do something. Always learning lessons. Always trying to change.
So where do you see the business a decade from now?
I'm really hoping I can expand. 5 workers, maybe something like that.
Trying to get like 5 times as many work, like jobs per week kind of thing.
Yeah, or bigger custom houses type thing, stuff like that. Yeah.
I'm curious, the old man at the beginning of the story that was just chopping wood, squinting eyes, what was it, a Makita or was it a DeWalt?
They used a lot of Makita and Hitachi.
Okay.
I used, what would that be, 8-inch blade, maybe 10-inch?
Yeah, that's a go-to kind of
Hitachi
trim.
With the... radial arms or whatever, the metal arms that slide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what this guy would always use. And even his, the first pneumatics I started working with, he had kind of older ones. They looked like Frankensteins, these things. They were all big metal, really
heavy.
Cool looking, heavy.
Yeah.
But cool looking. And when I first saw that, I was like, wow, this is cool. I've never seen
one
before.
And they were 18 and 16 gauge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
16 gauge, I think.
What was their background?
These guys were Portuguese.
They were Portuguese too? Yeah. So I'm trying to think of what guns they would be. I don't know if they'd be.
Hitachis?
Would they be Hitachis finishings?
Yeah, I think they were.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Hitachi was known for being kind of like the stainless steel kind of look.
Yeah, that's what
they
it
didn't
was.
Have a color, right?
Yeah.
That's so it probably
was. It was all metal, huge.
I mean, and technically speaking, there aren't that many components to them for them to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So technically speaking, other than them being too heavy.
Yeah. These things were abused, always thrown into like a basket, into the van, and then you'd have to go sit on them in the van, right?
Yeah. So all it did was really increase the amount of marring that was going on the wood, and you had to just watch how you planted it.
They
before
didn't
you,
care about
but
that.
They, no, because no, the painter, that's the painter's responsibility.
Yeah.
But when you started buying all your tools, you're going the Makita route?
So Makita is my compressor. And my corded tile cutter? What is that?
Tile saw.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. Makita's tile saw?
No, Makita's just the hand one.
Oh, the grinders.
Grinder, oh my
God. Yeah, grinder.
So a Makita grinder.
Makita grinder. I know everybody that has one of those, yeah.
With the wire is the best.
Yep.
Makita, the compressor I love. I love the Makita gun, 18 gauge. For saws, I use Bosch. The I really love the miter saw with the arm that comes out.
The Axial Glide.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Compared to those ones with the things.
With the rails, yeah, the rods.
I cut so much wood all the time. Those things used to get full of dust. And it becomes so hard to try to cut through a piece of poplar or something like that. The Bosch one cuts so nice and light. I love it. That and the table saw is Bosch.
I remember when with the full-size table saw one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have the job site one as well, too, the smaller one. I remember when they introduced the Axial Glide saw, I actually liked it. It made sense to me how they had the two pivoting points, horizontal and vertical plane, and they were trying to change the industry and get rid of the rails, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it never took off. But a lot of people don't understand that every brand's SDS is Bosch's patent.
Either the bits or whatever.
That SDS is a pot. It's a Bosch thing, right?
Oh,
so,
I see.
So Makita's version, Milwaukee's version, DeWalt's version, that's a Bosch. That's Bosch technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they were doing the same thing. And recently, the other one that they just did recently was the quick release grinders. So they were doing that other thing, which made a lot of sense instead of having to have the thread. And then if you're a rock and roller tradesperson, you never really tightened it. You just tightened it by hand, and then you went and started cutting metal, started grinding whatever it was, but. Yeah, I mean, Makita's is still good, but nobody ever took off on the quick release because you had to buy all new blades to use the quick release one, right?
Yeah.
And they released that 5 or 6 years ago, and it just hasn't taken off. Same with the Axial Glide. It never took off. A lot of people had a problem not being rails.
That's hands down the best saw I've ever
worked with. I agree with you. I have the 10-inch one. I don't like the 12. 12's
too
big.
I have the 12.
It's too big of a saw for me, man.
It's good for cutting big baseboard. And
no,
stuff.
You lay it flat.
Yeah.
I lay it flat at that point, right? And I get it. But I mean, it was just too big. And then the blades are all more expensive too and everything, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but
yeah,
I like it. I like the 12-inch. And another funny thing that I do is I keep the guard up. I know it's unsafe. That's another thing with, you know, if I bring in workers to have the guard up, it makes it easier to cut. And I found that every time I was cutting, there's these little wheels at the bottom.
Yep.
And they would start making marks on my baseboards. Yeah. So I keep mine up. I know it's unsafe.
No, I know. And sometimes
but it cuts so much easier.
We're cutting like something that. Because sometimes it doesn't, I guess it's just an adjustment. That's all it is. It's an adjustment on the guard to avoid those marks, right?
Maybe. I've seen that before. They have those two little.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And if you cut like a 45, it used to like get stuck sometimes. I was just having a hard time with it. So, I mean, that's super unsafe. And it's probably not good to have other workers working on it. But I know like how to work it.
Yeah, your saw.
Yeah, exactly.
And then why'd you go with the table saw? I guess because it just made sense with the miter?
Just, I needed a table saw. I didn't want to buy the DeWalt. Try the Bosch. I like trying different tools, but I just the saws for me, the Bosch ones are the best.
And then on a battery platform, what are you on?
So batteries is just mostly DeWalt.
Okay.
I have Milwaukee's as backup.
Oh, so you just got a mix of everything, eh?
Yeah, it's pretty much a rainbow. Yeah.
No, the Hitachi and then the Bosch and then Makita. No Makita.
Yeah,
no,
Makita's the
grinder.
The
and then you got DeWalt now. So now your guns are DeWalt?
Nail guns?
Impact.
Impact.
Or drill drivers.
Oh, like, yeah, no, they're DeWalt. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the battery stuff I have is DeWalt. So I bought when it was first those rounded batteries.
Yep.
And then I got the converter thing for the new batteries. And, you know, once you're like on one thing, it's hard to invest all that money into new batteries of a different kind. I have some Milwaukee that I tried. I find that the batteries aren't as good. They don't last as long.
They're charging out. Really?
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of good things. Well, I guess the more expensive, bigger.
Maybe mines are a little
older. The fuel, the M18, whatever fuel.
I have some fuel stuff. My drill stopped working. I don't know. That's my experience.
Listen, there's some hiccups. The tool could have been made on a Friday, whatever it was. Like, I don't know. Like, there's always little things. But I'd rather hear, and I was just having a meeting before we were recording with somebody else, a plumber, and he was just telling me about a particular brand that, he was just thoroughly disappointed at the lack of customer service coming from a problem of a failure of their product where it's like They installed it properly. It was done correctly. It failed. And then all of a sudden they did their, hey guys, listen, we have an issue with this product, call. And the lack of customer service was just not there. And he was just shocked because they were constantly using, possibly even endorsing this product, not because they were being paid by it, but they were just like, it's our go-to. This is where we use when it starts to build boiler assemblies and we start doing manifolds and things like that. And he was just shocked. And then it's gotten to the point where it's like, we don't even want to use them anymore.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's exactly what's going to happen. Tradespeople are loyal when you take care of them. And when you take care of them, I mean, when you return their phone calls, when you answer the call, when you speak to them and you listen to what they're saying, tradespeople are loyal. If you want to try to influence them and pay them or get them to use your product, they don't listen to you as much. But they listen to you if you treat them like a customer and you treat them with respect. Mm-hmm. So he was just, it's nice to hear that because I agree with it. 100%. Like if you disrespect us on a customer service level, you're going to see how quickly we're going to fly. We're going to just leave. It's just how it works.
Yeah. Even like, I used to have attachy nailers, 18 gauge, and the thing inside that pin that hits the nail, that would always break the tips on these things.
How was that happening?
They just, you know, if you nail into, sometimes if there's cement behind the wall or you hit something, they would break the tips.
Yeah.
And it used to cost $80, $90 for a new piece. And you can just go buy a gun for $120. So what's, and I got to take it apart, put it back together.
I think they do that on purpose. They want you to just buy the new one.
I found that those were breaking so much. The Makita one that I have takes way more abuse nailing stuff in. And nothing has happened yet to that pin inside.
I know, but buying a new tool to replace something like that, if that's an ongoing thing, you're basically taking profit away from your business.
Yeah.
Like I was at Maris Carpentry, his workshop, and he pulls out this drawer and he shows me a drawer of every possible version nail gun that you need, whether that be pneumatic, old school, battery, whatever it was. But he was showing me like all kinds of tools that a lot of people don't have that they bought that they maintain with globs of glue all over the place and just used, like properly used. Not Instagram worthy, but properly used. And they're there when they need it for an application. They could just pull out that drawer and pull it out and use it, and it serves a purpose there instead of having to just buy the latest and greatest and do a task with it, right?
Yeah, I try to get the most out of all my tools.
Like yeah, that Bosch saw. That's where I'm going with it, yeah.
I've calculated, I must have used it over 1,000 times. The thing costs $1,000. That means it costs me a dollar every time I pulled it out, which is a good, like, that's fantastic, right?
It's a good way to look at it.
If I think about how many cuts it's made, how much does each cut cost?
Yeah.
And
there goes 10 cents.
Like every time, right? But also the thing too now that's awesome is before we used to have to take those brushes out all the time.
Yeah.
And replace them.
Yeah.
That saws would stop working. You're like, that was the first time that I even knew there was brushes inside. One of those Hitachis for that first guy I worked for just wasn't working properly. And then the guy showed me, oh, there's brushes that go in there. I didn't even know. That was something I learned. And then now nothing. They don't even have those anymore, right?
Did you ever have a problem with your 12-inch one ever going out of square sometimes?
My Bosch?
Yeah.
So I know exactly what I need to do to make sure
that it's bang on square, right?
So I have to adjust a certain thing to make sure it's perfectly straight, a little bit to the right. Things you see once you make a first cut or something, you'll see the adjustments. But I know my tool so well that I know exactly where it needs to be for it to be straight, what it needs to do for 45, this and that. Yeah.
I noticed when they released the battery 12-inch axial glide, it was constantly going out of square to the point where we constantly had to set it up. And it was like, it was just frustrating.
And that was just sitting on site and using it.
Yeah. It wasn't. No. We were never throwing it around, throwing it into the back of something.
Yeah.
It's just the moment we would set it up, you'd make the first cut and you look at it and you go, that's a little bit off. What's going on here? And then you'd re-squared, adjusted, and then
yeah, you got to take apart that whole
thing, the whole plate and everything at that. But I was like, we were doing that far too many times for me to be happy about it. So it wasn't happening with the 10-inch one. I never got the 12-inch one, that one, but the 12-inch battery one was doing that, and I was like, what's going on here? There's got to be something. It was almost as if it wasn't tight enough that it was moving on its own when you did a cut, and it was just bothering me. But I didn't know the logistics of it. I was just like going, I can't dive into this, man. I went right back to the 10.
Yeah, but if you work with it all the time and you know the slight little adjustments you need to make, I know exactly what I need to do to make sure everything is square. For my saw, if I use somebody else's, I'd have to make a cut, check, make sure it's square. I also like to check the, sometimes they're, you know, they're slightly off and they're coming down.
Of course.
Make sure that's square as well, because or else when you cut your corners, you know, they'll be open or closed or whatever. Just not right.
So what's something that you haven't had a client ask you to build yet that you want to build?
Wow. I'm not, that's tough to say. I've done
Well, you've done paneling, you've done doors, you've done, you've done all the other rooms, the tiling and everything like that, but I don't know. Is there something that you haven't built any?
I honestly don't.
Any secret doors?
I remember. I've never done anything like that. No, that's a good one.
A client asked me to do it one time.
Or just like something with like, some kind of hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was totally fun to do.
You know what? That's probably my answer. Thanks for answering for me.
No, because it was interesting that they asked me to do it and we were trying to figure out how we do this because it was just a nook in the basement that if you didn't know any better, you wouldn't realize that there's actually a space there. And then the way we built it, you have no idea that there's space back there. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted this space for a gun safe and he just wanted to, a certain way to access it. And I had a blast. I totally had a blast putting this together and learning about magnets and learning about just sauce hinges, different setup and all kinds of stuff. It was like, I enjoyed that thoroughly to do that.
I haven't had a chance to do that yet. Yeah.
There's lots of things. I'm trying to figure out like what else is there to, I'm not big on home theaters. I actually like the idea of, I never liked on the drawings, unexcavated space underneath the garage floor. I always thought that was just a waste of space. I was like a waste of opportunity because you can just lower the footings 2 feet and make it the same depth as the basement.
Yeah.
And then you have this space that's, for the most part, double car garage, 22 by 22 feet.
Yeah.
That's a big amount of space, but now it's just dirt. And that's where your basement ends. And I just kept on thinking, there's space here to do something. Like, I get it. It's more expensive. It's going to cost you, at the time, a little bit more to do it because now you're going to have to do prefabricated concrete slab to take the weight.
You know, what's funny is I did that at my house. I have a double tandem garage. So, you know, two cars and two cars behind.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing. I tore down my old one. We built a new one. Since we had a hole, might as well go down a little bit
extra. So you went down. You did it.
So I've got 10-foot ceilings under my garage with core slab on top. Yeah.
See, that's smart.
Why not? It's already open. It doesn't cost you that much more.
At the time, it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that room.
No.
There's no columns in it. There's no nothing. It's
what do you use for that room? Like, what's in that?
Right now, it's called Lower Unctin. I don't know if you know what that's from, that reference.
No.
You ever watch Married with Children?
Yeah, a long time.
When they went to England, and there was that place that was dark all the time. There was Upper Unctin and Lower Unctin.
Okay, all right, all
right. Anyways, that room right now is Lower Unctin, which we don't really, it's not ready yet.
But something will be used storage in that space, right?
Yeah, eventually.
So how big is that space? It's a
40 by 20.
Yeah, man, that's huge.
Yeah, it's an awesome room. It's just, it's not finished right now.
And then everything, what was realistically the cost? That. Like the additional cost to do it that way instead of you, if you were just to unexcavate it?
I mean, the core slabs cost $20,000 right there. So
yeah,
the extra foundation work, I mean, the foundation cost another $20,000, but I'm not exactly sure how much more it costs. But
for the scope of the whole house, you're probably looking at 50 or 60 grand.
Yeah.
And but what you get is 40 by 20 of space extra in your basement.
Yeah.
That's a huge amount of space.
In-floor heating, we did the hydronics or whatever, all that stuff. It's all set up, ready to go.
Could also be a rental property too.
if you can get into there, that's, yeah, there would be an issue with two exits and all that
stuff. Of course, yeah. But I mean, like,
there's only one way in. There's no windows, no nothing.
But that's a lot of space.
It's a nice room.
So you can make it for a golf simulator. You can make it for a home theater. You can make it for a wine center, a gym, exercise. You can. That's a lot of space.
As long as there's not any of that radon gas I keep hearing about.
What, coming out of concrete?
I don't know. That's what I keep hearing. If your basement's really low, there's more potential.
You got more issues coming out of the furnishings that people are buying from big box places. Of off-gassing from those fabrics,
like
you
the
do
new car smell,
all kinds. Yeah, that new car smell is not actually a nice thing. No. But that you have more risk there than you do of this concrete exposing, right? Yeah, expelling itself, right?
I've seen them selling for radon gas underneath the slab with the holes inside.
You have to, in some areas. I think code is asking you to do that, right? Who's on the show? There was somebody on the show that actually brought that up where you're supposed to connect that so it absorbs it.
Yeah, it's almost like a vent.
Yeah.
To vent it out. Anyways, I don't know. I should get it tested, though. Why not?
Might as well.
To be safe.
But, I mean, my argument is that the stuff that you're buying and where it's fabricated.
Yeah.
Like the chemicals that are going into that stuff, right?
Chemicals in our food.
That's a whole other world, man.
This, that, and the other. Yeah, that's okay.
Do you see yourself teaching the crew, the five guys in the future, like how you did things?
For sure, the tricks. There's obviously tricks of the trade. Yeah. There's things I picked up from so many guys that I watched working. Yeah, you have to pass that stuff on, right? I mean, it's going to help them, which in turn helps you.
Yeah.
As the guy in charge, right? Yeah.
But that makes you like the teacher, right? You're a teacher and... Now you got to educate these people, right? But do you have a lot of hope in the next future of tradespeople?
Do I have hope in them? You have to. Did you hear yesterday or the announcement? Government of Canada is going to build 33 million homes or something.
Yeah, it's just like...
By 2031.
A person who has... what did he call himself? He had a difficulty calculating his small numbers. There was like a clip that he was just talking about that. So it's like, based on his calculations, we'd have to be building, I think it's 200 homes a day.
Yeah, wow, something like that, eh?
We've never in the history of this country ever hit that marker, ever, anywhere near.
These sites that I used to work on, we used to pump out houses like crazy.
But to complete homes, finish 200 a day, 200 plus a day, it's not possible. It's impossible, right?
Yeah.
And my argument for anybody who wants to argue with me about housing shortages and stuff like that, you have to fix the labor shortage first. Mm-hmm. And the labor shortage is the biggest problem right now. And there's a lot of bureaucracy behind that on how the system is set up. Like when it starts talking about Red Seal opportunities and apprenticeships and everything, it's just like, it's designed for a lot of these people that want to get into construction to fail. And when I say fail, not meet the requirements to actually achieve to get that accreditation, right? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you got to start all over again. Or if you fail, then you have to rewrite the test because there's a fee attached to that. Mm-hmm. So it's like going to do your driver's license. There's a fee. And if you fail, then you have to do it again. So you pay it again. You pay it again. You pay it again. So it's actually beneficial to fail people instead of to succeed them, to move them forward. The objective is to solve housing.
But beneficial to who, though?
Well, to bean counters, to people that are making these rules up, to people that benefit from this money.
The managers.
Yeah, but the long-term benefit is for the collective, where it's just like the country gets more tradespeople, the country gets more homes being produced. But the thing is, you're stifling these people that want to get into construction, which is the worst thing you can do. And you're doing it because of short-term monetary gains. Mm. That's the problem here. So it's just, it kind of irritates me sometimes. Like, so whenever there's a media bite, you're talking about, yeah, we're going to build this many homes by the 2031, 2032,
it's easy
whatever
to say.
It is. It's completely easy to say.
Yeah.
And the problem is that it's easy to say by someone who's never swung a hammer, who's never worn any safety boots, who only puts a hard hat on when it comes to a photo op.
Yeah.
Right? It's like I've always said it, tradespeople should have a bigger voice when it comes to decisions like this. Like, they should have consulted with one tradesperson from every province and territory. Ask their opinion. Is this doable? Can we build this many homes in the next 6 years? Is this a possibility? 8 years. Is this a possibility?
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, every single tradesperson, if you just pick them randomly out of everywhere, would say no, based on experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're getting someone who doesn't have any experience sharing their professional opinion.
This is almost like clients when they tell you, oh, it's going to be easy. This is really easy for you to do. And it's like you show up. Yeah.
Well, go ahead and do it.
And I have contractors like that too. Oh, Dan, don't worry. It's only going to take you a day. It's fast. Don't worry. You can get this done real easy.
Then you show up.
But you show up, it's something totally different.
Let them do it. They want to. If they think it's so easy, then you do it.
Mm.
If you've seen it on Pinterest and you've seen it on YouTube, you've seen it on HGTV, then you do it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of skill. There's a lot of art. There's a lot of professional. Like, respect that, please. Simple as that. Like, everyone who's showing up to do something has years of experience behind that. Whether it's working for somebody else or on their own, they've learned their bumps and bruises, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can do it a lot better that day.
Yeah.
But if you want to disrespect that person by saying, I can do this or it's easy to do this, then go ahead. You do it. I'm not stopping you. You don't have to hire me. I'm going to go down the street. I'll work for your neighbor or whatever.
They'll find somebody else.
Simple as that. Do you have a hard time telling clients no? Like, oh, I can't lower this price?
I learned that from you. That's the number one commandment of construction. You know, like, you got to say no sometimes.
Say no.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough, though.
It's an 80s commercial about drugs. You know what I mean?
It's so hard to say no, though. Like, try to be friendly and nice. And
what's the fear? That you're not going to have any work and you're going to have this week off and you're going to be nervous about bills and stuff?
I mean, I guess that's always a thought in the back of your mind, right?
That's construction being on your own.
Yeah.
If you're working for somebody, then that's their problem, not your problem. You just got to deliver enough to not be fired,
mm-hmm.
which we've all seen, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's always a challenge. But I honestly believe, though, in construction, if you say no to this, you'll get a yes soon enough.
Yeah. Eh?
I totally think you will. Wow. Right? But you have to just constantly be out there. Like, I've had plenty of people on the show. The door knocking is insane. Just stuff that they were doing is insane.
A couple of months ago, a contractor called me to do a job, do an estimate. So I go out. It was a washroom in a condo.
Okay.
So it's in a condo. It's, you know, you got to bring all the garbage out.
Of course.
It's going to cost more time, more this, more that. I need to bring on a plumber who's certified. I won't touch any plumbing in condos, just in case. You never know.
Some condos actually demand that you have to use one of them from a preferred list, right?
Oh, okay. I don't even know.
Yeah, that sometimes comes up, right?
But I got my plumber buddy comes. He's certified, insurance, all that stuff. So that I won't touch. So I give him a price to the contractor. He adds whatever he adds to it. Do what you want. He gives it to the client. The client says, okay. He comes back to me and tells me, okay, Dan, they said, yeah. I go, okay, let's get a deposit. And we'll start next month for scheduling. He goes, okay, let me get back to you. A week goes by. David, sorry, did I just say his name?
Don't worry about it.
I need my deposit for this thing so I can put it in my schedule. Okay, let me go talk to them again. He comes back to me. Dan, it's a go. Put it in your schedule. It's a go.
This is a week after?
This is 3 weeks before.
Okay.
Still no deposit. So another week passes. I should have said no there. Another week passes. I call him again. Okay, let me call him. Another week passes. The weekend before we're about to start the job, I'm like, David, I need the deposit. I got to go buy stuff or else, you know, nothing's happening. I scheduled a good month off for this job. He calls me. Oh, I'm so sorry. She found somebody else. I was like, I just booked a whole month off to do this. And this is like the weekend before when I should have said no at the beginning.
Did you ask him why he wasn't returning your calls?
He just, I don't know. It's just, I should have said no a month before and I would have had something else scheduled.
Yeah.
I was put into a spot after where I had to accept another job I didn't really want at a price that I didn't want, but I had to take it because.
Is this guy, you've done work for him before?
Yeah, I've worked okay. for, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
I've worked for him. I've worked in his house. I've worked for his wife. He's done other jobs that I've done. Yeah.
So what was with this job? Why wasn't he getting back to you on this job?
I don't know. I think it was the client was maybe giving him a runaround kind of thing. I have no clue.
I know, but he dragged you out for 3 weeks when he could have just said, unless he was thinking that she was going to just come to her senses or something and agree to it.
I think that she had told him, yeah, 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 you're good. And then we got screwed at the end.
Were you able to get some work to line it up at that time or no?
To get more work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I ended up having to take another job that I didn't want to do for a price. Not that I didn't want to do it. I just didn't want to do it for that price.
It filled in.
This lady, yeah, okay. And it worked out, but then I'm only making $200 a day instead of what I should have been making on that washroom job.
So what happens now the next time that he contacts you?
It's a deposit.
Yeah, but I mean, what if he drags it out again?
Then it's not in the schedule.
So if you talk to him?
I'll schedule something else. I'll be like, no, it's not
happening. If you talk to him and you go, listen, if I don't have the deposit by the end of this week, then I'm going to be booking somebody else for that time. Simple as that.
I'll just book somebody until it's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't even care to wait. I don't give those chances anymore. That's where I finally started saying no, you know? Yeah.
What else do I want to know about you? Why the name Sons of Carpentry?
Just watching the, you know.
Sons the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just, it came to my head, and I just thought it was brilliant.
No, it's a great name. I like it. It's a great
name. I get a lot of attention. When people see me on the road, you'll see them talking to each other. Oh, look, Sons of Carpentry. And they look over, and they're laughing. Guys stop me. Thumbs up. Great name, this and that. You know, it gets a lot of attention. It stays in your head.
Yeah, it does.
You might not need a carpenter today or the work done today, but you're going to remember.
You'll remember it when the situation comes up. You'll look it up, Sons of Carpentry.
And there's even people that have called me before and are like, oh, I saw you last year driving around. I was like, okay.
Now, here's a stupid question. Are people thinking that you only do carpentry?
Yeah, for sure.
Probably, right?
Yeah, mostly. They don't know a lot of the things that I do. Yeah. They mostly think it's carpentry work.
Why is it that all you carpenters don't necessarily like sharing all these secrets on social media? You guys are always nervous about giving up
secrets. Like, what kind of secrets?
Just techniques, certain things. Like, I find that the carpentry angle on social media a very private. They want to network without networking. They want to know what your secrets are, but they don't want to give up their secrets. And I'm like, guys, man, this is like networking is about you give me something, I give you something. Mm-hmm. I find that you guys are not like plumbers. You're not like HVAC. You're not like electricians. Those trades are always more than willing to give up secrets. Concrete guys are always more than willing to give up secrets. But Finnish carpenters, like, no, I can't say like, I don't know. There was just something stupid. What type of clamp or what type of glue or what type of whatever it is, one little technique that they've learned. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to reveal it. They just never want to reveal it.
I guess that's just being selfish. I don't know. Like for me, I don't even post that much on Instagram.
Yeah.
Just every once in a while, a picture. It's just, I feel like it's too much work to do that. I don't even have time for that. You know, the family, the kids.
Of course.
All kinds of other things going on in life. And now once you start feeding the beast, you got to continue. You can't stop, right?
But everyone is like, they continue it in the hopes of making money from it as another revenue stream, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason behind it. But
I get some jobs through Instagram too. And there was a client not too long ago I did fixing up things that the contractor left problems. Obviously, you don't hear the whole story. You don't hear both sides.
Of course, we don't know what side. Yeah, of course.
But this one contractor apparently is having a lot of problems because other clients of his are going back to them and talking and saying, did this happen to you with this guy? And that, like, so she found me on Instagram. But before me, she called somebody else from Instagram. And the work that this guy did... His caulking, like just a piece of wood or something, it was like the most terrible thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I could do better with my toes. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Was he just doesn't give a shit anymore or something?
I don't know, but he's on Instagram and they found nice pictures of his work somehow.
And then they hire him and he does a shit job.
They had a terrible job. And then I went in
to fix
a few things.
Okay.
Change a few. They didn't like certain baseboards the guy had put in or whatever, caulking the way he did it. So I just fixed their stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's just like how you said, it's just feeding the beast. Like some people are just using it, trying to build it as a secondary revenue stream. And then they realize there's a lot of work here. It's another job. It's a second job. That's why I've actually had to pull back. I just focus on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like you have to make that decision one day or another that do you want to feed that beast, keep going down that route? For sure, you can. But it's going to be time consuming. And there's lots of, I think a lot of carpenters don't really want to go down that route. But a lot of the younger ones want to go down that route because there's an opportunity to get some free tools out of it.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And then there's the endorsements attached to that, right? And not everybody's tool brand-wise has all the best tools for a particular trade.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mixed bag of everything. That's a real tradesperson, right? But they don't care about that anymore. The marketing guys, they don't give a shit about that. So Instagram and social media and construction is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to think that the real tradespeople are now in front. And the work is in front now instead of the celebrity status bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was what the case was, I think, during the COVID years and then before that, leading up to that, it was always about being the cool kid on Instagram regarding how you presented yourself. And I'm like, those days are done. I think everyone started growing up.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think those days are done, right?
I finished the sauna recently, too. It came out, like, really nice. And then I saw a guy, another worker who was doing carpentry in the house. I was just hired just to do strictly this sauna.
Yep.
They had other trim carpenters, whatever, taking pictures of my work. And I'm assuming he was probably going to go say it was his work. You know what I mean? Like that happens all the time too on Instagram.
Was it a sauna kit or was
it? Yeah, it was that kit.
Okay. All right. I
have pictures of it.
Yeah. I saw Instagram. The sauna there. Yeah. Which is great.
Yeah. It was a kit at some company. They needed it done. He wasn't confident in his guy, so he called me.
To do the kit, he wasn't, and he was handling the trim of the rest of the project?
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I got to do the 12 questions.
Sure.
You ready for this, Dan?
Yeah.
Hang on. www.sonsofcarpentry.ca to email them is sonsofcarpentry@gmail.com, and you can find them on Instagram and Facebook under Sons of Carpentry. What is your favorite construction word?
Oh, man. It's got to be Caralho. Ecuador.
Where are you from? Where's the family from?
Mainland, just north of Porto.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your least favorite tool?
Least favorite tool. Wow. I'm just going to have to say like a crowbar or something.
Yeah, because it just means work.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
And it's like...
Leverage.
Nothing nice is ever being done with that, ever.
And is it just me or just like pulling out a nail with a like a really rusty old nail, pulling it out of with a crowbar, that sound of that. It's just almost like, you know, nails on the chalkboard kind of thing.
Yeah.
What construction sound do you love? Speaking of which.
Wow. Making this way more difficult than it needs to be.
No. If there's a particular sound that comes up that you love.
I'm going to say when my measuring tape retracts, you know, that rolling sound inside?
Yeah.
I like that.
It's pretty cool. Favorite beverage?
Favorite beverage. We'll have to go with water. It's the best, right?
Sure. What turns you on and off in construction?
Turns me on is... completing a project and it comes out like really nice and you're happy with your work. Off is when you have clients who don't appreciate the amount of work that actually goes into what you're doing. You know, it's not just what's happening there. It's behind the scenes and all that stuff.
I agree. Favorite curse word?
Didn't I just say caralho already?
sometimes the first. Oh,
the construction word is the curse word.
Basically, sometimes that happens. If it's the same one, it's fine. What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Vehicle. I mean, do airplanes count?
Of course.
I love airplanes. Not that I'm a pilot or anything like that. Just the
feel. Like single engine airplanes kind of thing or jets?
Yeah, like jet.
Okay.
Yeah, like, yeah, big planes.
Okay.
Passenger, military, all that stuff. I think it's super cool.
It's pretty cool. What do you miss from your childhood?
It would have to be like the innocence, not worrying about anything.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
So that's, it would either be a pilot or an astronaut, something like that. Yeah.
Well, pilots lead to astronauts.
So. Yeah, you kind of have to do both, right?
Yeah. What profession would you not like to do?
I hate taking out toilets. I think it's the worst thing ever. So I think I have to say plumber almost.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Daniel, you tried your best every time. That's it.
That's it. Daniel, thank you so much, man, for being on the show, taking your time, and happy birthday again, and enjoy the rest of the day. And I appreciate you spending some time in the studio here, sharing.
Thanks for having me. Look up to you. I've been following you for a long time. Yay.
Thanks, man.
Do great work, and what you're doing is amazing. I've learning so much from listening to your podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm just sharing what I can, get people on the show that's smarter than me, and just talk to them and ask them questions. And I'd like to get back on the tools and doing stuff, but it just get rid of the clients. And I might get back on the tools. Simple as that.
You need the clients, though, for the work, unfortunately.
Yes and no. I'll argue that point all the time. Check them out, sonsofcarpentry.ca, gmail.com, and on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks very much, Daniel.
Thank you.
All right, right here.